Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. Every Sunday at 7 a.m. and p.m., and if you think I'm doing the show live, you have got another thing coming. I'm not getting up at 5 or 6 to get to the station by 7. I know some people are dedicated, but that was in my early years. I actually worked the overnight, midnight to 8, and so I'm kind of over that. It was exciting then. We're also on Mondays at 1 a.m., and we stream live at richarddugan.com. The radio show's page is also where we archive the programs. We link to our guests' websites, and we encourage you to go there, check out what they have to offer. If it resonates with you, fantastic. If it doesn't, hey, stay away. It's not something that we make mandatory. We would never do that. We want you to come to the understanding of yourself and where you are and where you're going through the guests that we have. And if they offer you insight and inspiration and guidance and whatever the case may be, please check it out. We'll have the link up to our guest as well here not too long from now, and along with the interview so that you can listen to it. And also a reminder that what you hear on the radio isn't necessarily what you're going to find on the website, meaning the radio version is short. We have a limited time, but we may talk to our guest for an hour and 20 minutes, 2 hours, who knows? So you're going to have to go there and continue to get more information, and today is no exception to that rule. Very excited to have in studio from Los Angeles, and I thank you so much for making the drive up.
Oh, my pleasure.
This is a lot of fun for me because it's one of those things where I kind of joke about this. Whenever I have anybody who is a therapist or an intuitive, a psychic, what have you, a clairvoyant, I'm going, okay, now, how do I protect my personal information from this person so they don't, you know? And Wendy Coulter, thank you so much from the Practical Path website and the work that you do. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And I love what you're doing. It's just bringing information to the world and to interested parties and interested people. And it just helps raise awareness on all these wonderful topics.
And you also got an insight into what it is that I do when I'm not doing this program.
That's a lot of plates.
Was I on fire? Was that why I was moving so fast? Someone set me ablaze?
You pretty much, yeah.
And I have to tell you, there have been days like that in the last few years. And when I was first in this business, it was just the way that it was.
Yeah.
You know, you just, it wasn't something that you escaped. It was something you adjusted to.
Yes,
and when
did.
I was in my teens and 20s, it was so much easier.
Yeah.
But it's not too bad now.
Well, there comes a time, you know, where you want your energy just to kind of feel more calm in general.
And I get that more and more, especially because we moved here to Santa Barbara from Phoenix, Arizona, I'd been wanting to get to the water for decades.
Yeah.
And we used to attend this gathering in Phoenix where this one woman would channel. It was an unconscious channel.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking with her after the fact that she never wanted to hear the recording. She never wanted to know what was going on because it was just not something that she felt that it kind of got in the way.
Interesting.
Anyway, it was called Equinox.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it
that
wasn't
one.
A single individual. It was a collective. And so, but there was always one voice. And always used to tell me, and I still have those recordings that I made on my end. I remember one, Raja here. Do you have any messages for me? Why aren't you at the ocean? Well, I'm working on it. I mean, it was always, there was sort of the harassment, as it were.
You were being harassed by the people, energies from the other side to get to the water.
Exactly. Well, and finally made it. So now I can go, I can walk to the beach in 20 minutes as opposed to 20 days from Phoenix.
Yeah.
And I know that we talk about this a lot on this program about the path, our life's purpose, and getting where we need to be, want to be, have to be. These are three different categories.
Yep.
And you deal, I mean, your website is practical.
The practical path.com.
.com.
Yep.
And you provide all kinds of different services?
Well, what I do these days mostly is I teach a program in medical intuition. And that's an intuitive skill set. And I teach mostly people in the healthcare field. So not just doctors and nurses, but psychologists, social workers, massage therapists, you name it. Anyone who works with people in a health, from a health perspective.
Mm-hmm.
who want to learn how to enhance and grow their intuition so they can use it in their with their patients or clients.
Okay.
And that's my main focus. I started out as a energy healer, as many people do. Excuse me. and also as a clairvoyant, and I did classic clairvoyance reading for people and things like that. And I noticed in my work that there was this missing piece in healthcare. a lot of misdiagnosis and a lot of unknowns out there. And in the traditional medical world, allopathic field, and also in the complementary alternative field, there was a bit of tunnel vision. And I felt there needed to be a synthesis of the energy work and the clairvoyant work, the intuitive work. And so I developed my program based on that.
This clairvoyance you talk about,
mm-hmm.
First of all, define that a little bit. What does that mean?
Well, that's such a good question. No one's asked me to define it before. And I can't really define it for anyone else, but how I use clairvoyance, well, actually, I can. The definition of clairvoyance is actually, it's a French word, and it means clear seeing, clairvoyant. And it's a way to use your intuitive senses in a visual way. And a lot of people are what I call clairsentient. They feel the information. Mm-hmm. So they'll call themselves empathic. And that's true. They're getting the information through their feeling sense or through their cognizance, their sense of knowing. That's mm-hmm. claircognizance. Clairaudience is a sense of hearing. Some people hear voices or they hear information. I see information. And that's a very specific skill set of intuition, what I call a meta sense, a meta visual sense. And that actually takes practice and training.
Now, is the information coming in images or
in images.
Sounds?
It can be both. It's okay. A little bit like watching a movie of someone's life.
Okay.
It's actually a lot like that.
I know that when we start talking about the area of, for example, telepathy, which requires no vocabulary, requires no language, it's just, this is my understanding. I'm not necessarily saying I've ever experienced it, but that it's images. It's just pictures.
Yeah.
Because we know what somebody is showing us when they show it to us. Whereas when they start to try to describe it, words get in the way.
Well, you know what's really interesting about this work is what I'm always looking for is the original point of trauma in someone's energy, where things shifted for them mm-hmm. that perhaps caused, and this is the crux of medical intuition, where did this physical issue come from?
Okay.
Is it purely physical? Is there an emotional component? The point of view of energy medicine of any kind is that there is an original trauma that shifted energy in some fashion that led to either chronic or acute conditions. And an energy worker will clear out whatever blocks are there, but a medical intuitive will look for the original trauma point and give you that information. So it could be conscious awareness or it might be completely unconscious. And most of the time I see things that are from someone's youth where something shifted, something happened, and a pattern started to be set up that led to, 30 years later, 20 years later, or even the next day, some kind of physical manifestation. So when I look for those events in someone's life, I'm actually watching a movie of their life at this particular turning point. It's fascinating to see.
So you're talking about symptom versus source in many instances.
I'm talking about the source of the symptom.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well said, actually. I have to tell you, it's incredible work because I never know what I'm going to see. I never know what I'm going to be shown. And I never know what the answer is until I look. So it's really quite a unique way to deal with health issues.
Now, do you only, so to speak, switch it on when you're being asked to do so? Or does it sometimes just happen where, you're maybe watching, who knows, maybe you're watching television or a news program or you're watching someone at the store or what have you, and then the impressions, they just come?
Yeah, that's a great question. I call those flashes of insight, meaning, and people who recognize themselves or define themselves as empathic or intuitive will tell you this all the time. And anyone who works with energy will tell you this all the time, is that they get hits on things. They're working with someone and they get a hit of some information. It could come as words or sounds or a visual or something like that. Those are fantastic. And to answer your question, yes, they happen a lot. But I don't call them the same thing as when I sit down and purposefully and deliberately get into the intuitive state to do a reading for someone or a look at their physical body or their issues. It's really two different things. Flashes are just what they are. They're flashes. So, yes, I can look at someone's energy. I have a zillion stories about that. And most energy workers do, where you just get this sort of instant information. But for the most part, I will tell you, Richard, I don't honestly trust that 100% because my own perceptions could be part of it. And my own biases or whatever, you know, we all have them, could, you know, or that sort of way of thinking. When I'm in the intuitive state, it's a very neutral state. I'm not looking at you visually. I've got my eyes closed. I may not even know what you look like. I work with people all over the world I've never personally seen. And the information is designed, the way I use this skill and the way I teach it, is for the information to come in purely without any bias and extremely neutral. So that's really the cornerstone of my work. And I will tell people if they say, hey, you know, we're at a cocktail party or at an event, someone goes, hey, tell me about this. I'll say, well, you know what? Let's make an appointment. I'll sit down and take a look.
Yeah.
But occasionally I'll just get a hit on something.
Yeah.
And it's fun when it happens, but I will always want to go and check it.
And you have a minimum of two variables. One you've already mentioned, yourself.
Yeah.
But you also have the other variable of the other individual.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a third variable, and that is that everything's still in everything is in flux.
Well, you nailed it. It's called free will. And we have the ability to shift our energy and our life story at any given moment. That's what I see when I look at energy and when I connect with energy and spirit, whatever you want to call it.
I don't often, matter of fact, I rarely ever go down a laundry list of my guest is this, that, and the other thing. But just for, because I encourage people to go to the website to read about, you know, I don't want to waste time. I produce programs where the host, and I don't stop them from doing it because that's their style. That's what they want to do. But they'll go and they'll sit there for literally 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes running down the laundry list. And they'll have rather prominent people on.
Sure.
Of what they've accomplished and the degrees. I mean, you're certified master healer, medical intuitive, clairvoyant practitioner, teacher, minister, coach, you know, and chief bottle washer, as it were.
That's right.
And the list goes on, as well as, you know, your main thrust these days, of course, is, as you've already described, the medical intuitive training that you provide with people. And again, you say primarily in the medical field.
Or the healthcare field.
I'm sorry, healthcare. Yeah. Healthcare field.
Yeah.
I happen to, and this was more by accident in a manner of speaking, because none of this I never sought after it. It was sort of, for the most part, I'm going to have to say that I have been that proverbial leaf that fell off a tree and landed in a stream and it's just been going.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a Reiki. I have the Reiki mastership.
Excellent.
It's been a while since I've had that training, but I still know basically about it. And I do try to listen to as we like to talk about, the still small voice, intuition. Yeah. We've even gotten into conversations about, well, how can you be sure that that's the higher self, that's God, that's whatever, you know, as opposed to the voices inside that are telling you to go out and do these things.
I can talk a lot about that.
And that's a real concern, I know, on a part of a lot of folks, because you hear a lot of different voices in your head, and you may not be clinically diagnosed as someone with these various psychiatric or psychological issues of split personalities and on and on and on. It may be very normal. We all have those voices going on in our heads.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so which one, could you move aside so I can hear the other one? And I liked what that one said, but I didn't care for that one. And of course, the voices that, you know, you talked about this in terms of going way back to childhood, those voices that we heard as we were growing up, you know, you're not good enough, you're not tall enough, you're not, you know, you're not this, you're not that, you're not the other.
Well, I'll tell you my perspective on the higher self. And that's what I call, what some people call spirit or this or that. My connection and my relationship with my higher self, my higher guidance, is pretty rock solid after many, many, many years, you know, almost 20 years of really working this as a professional and studying and all that. And there's a very distinct difference between the voice of my higher self and my own mind and my own judgments or my own critical inner voice or my own, And I know the difference. But it is one of those things that until you get into the study of it, and I just have to keep stressing that because it really is a study, you won't know the differentiation.
Yeah.
So when I take my students through the course, boy, by the end of the program, they certainly know the difference between their higher self, their critical inner voice, and their own thoughts and judgments or anything else that might come in.
Yeah.
When you're talking about mental illness, you know, bipolar issues or schizophrenia or things where there really is, in you know, it's chemical or whatever in the brain that is causing this malfunction.
Yeah.
That's a whole different story.
Yeah.
That is something that in as a medical intuitive, I can look at and see in the functionality of the brain and what's happening there.
Yeah. There's one television show I just cannot stand to watch. I know what's coming. I know what's going to happen. And that's a TV show called Criminal Minds.
No, I haven't watched that one.
Oh, it's just, well, it's fine. You've probably had enough people come through your doors in that regard or something along those lines. Because you already know these people that they're going to be investigating are, you know, they've gone off the deep end.
Yeah.
You know, you know, they're not thinking, they don't have a full deck, as the phrase goes, or all those other wonderful little puns and what have you. And it's like, okay, they've killed 5,700 people, and they have this MO, and we're going to catch them, and on and on and on and on and on. And it's like, oh my gosh, why are we producing these kinds of...
This is pretty dark.
Yeah, it really is. Matter of fact, and it's strange how this came about, but there's even this new program. I can't remember what network it's on now, but it has to do with, it's called The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, yeah, that's, I've been reading about that.
Yeah, well, my wife is into this kind of stuff. I'm not, and I just sit there and I watch it, and it's dark.
We're talking like mind control, that sort of thing?
In a manner of speaking, yes. Yeah. And of course, they justify this is like almost sort of post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
There's been this major catastrophe, disaster, pollution, da-da-da-da-da. Most of the people on the planet are sterile.
Yeah.
But the women are captured by this one group that's governmentally sanctioned. Matter of fact, the government... You know, and this is a strange tangent I'm going off on. People are worried in this country about certain religious groups wanting to establish religious law. I'm going to use that word. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They're worried about the establishment in certain communities of law based on religion. Okay. But they want to do the same thing with their religion. And that's what in this television program they've done. Somebody has transgressed. So according to the laws in this particular book, chapter, verse of the Bible, you are found guilty of, and the sentence is da 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 da.
Well, that, you know.
And I'm just, but I'm watching this program and it's like, again, why are we going here? I mean, I myself, I'd rather watch comedies. I love the Big Bang Theory and hearing science stuff. Which, by the way, I talked with a physicist who loves the show, and he says, "Oh, everything they talk about it's real."
I'm sure.
Okay.
Well, you know, here's my thought about dark, you know, entertainment. It does reflect something in our energy that can be very dark. You know, humans have a long eons and centuries and whatnot of abuse of each other, and that's not our higher selves.
Yeah.
I mean, that is not what our higher selves are made of.
Yeah.
That stuff is all about the karmic, kind of the karmic trajectory of our soul's path. And, you know, literature and movies and whatnot tend to reflect it in an exaggerated way. However, there's certainly tons of recorded history about human rights abuses of every kind.
Right.
And where we have evolved to here is a very interesting place on our planet right here, right now. And we're all, you know, can be kind of dark out there. And there's a need. There are a lot of people who wish to control other people, and there's a very high capacity for denial in humans. So when I look at someone's energy, Richard, I am going to also look to see where that denial is in their energy, where that darkness is, where things shifted for them, so that they can start to release some of this defeatist feelings, repressed feelings. You can't be a human without having some sort of, without, you know, even as children, we're generally controlled in some way. And, you know, for the most part, it's for our own safety.
Sure.
But when it's not, when there's abuse or alcoholism or something that's very detrimental to the soul and spirit, people grow up like little sort of twisted trees. You know, they can't quite grow up straight and strong. And it's important for us. The good news is that we all have this internal ability to move toward the light, you know, move toward health and wholeness. We do. We're just, that's part of our human birthright.
Yeah.
So as a healer and as someone who helps people with these sorts of issues, when they feel like they're stuck or stymied in some way, or something's happening for them that's fairly dramatic, that's the job of the intuitive, really, and the job of the healer.
Well, I have to say that I, in spite of the fact, ironically, that I have worked over the years for news talk information stations, I try not to listen
any
more
you.
Than I have to.
I don't blame
Matter of
you.
Fact, when you know, when this last presidential election and campaign rolled through, I had no interest whatsoever. And for some reason, until September of 2016, I'm going, how did I get sucked into this?
Yeah.
And then it took me several months to extricate myself and begin to laugh, be able to laugh about it, as well as to begin the process of having empathy, if not sympathy or even pity, because I was starting to see some things that were from a personal observation of the person, not of the administration or the Congress or the Supreme Court or groups or this kind of thing, but actually looking at the individual.
Yes.
And I started seeing things that I started feeling sad for this person.
Yes. I will tell you that in every class, as we practice the act and the art of intuitive connection, that we do, with energetic permission, of course, only, look at people in the news, look at their energy. And again, there's energetic permission on a soul-to-soul level.
Right.
And the things that we can see in people's energies in terms of how they became who they are, how they came to these opinions or beliefs about life is fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Fascinating.
Well, and I know you're very familiar with this, and we've talked with people on this program countless times over the last 10 years in regards to, you know, the not only the issues that they have had to deal with in their childhood and coming forward, but even in past lives.
Oh, without question.
I mean, I'm now working with a gentleman dealing with the space between lives, and that's what he deals with, life between lives.
Yeah, that's great.
And I went through my own 3-hour session with him, and I wasn't really shocked. I wasn't really surprised. It was more, and this is kind of where I come from with folks such as yourself who have that intuitive bent. I don't want to know something because I don't already know it.
Right.
I want you to tell me, to help give me confirmation. It's like that outside support.
Yeah, that's great. And honestly, that is very, I would say most often how a reading would go. Sometimes there's new information for the client for sure. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, people have an intuitive sense or even a knowledge of something that happened in their youth, but they don't, the dots are not necessarily connected.
Yeah.
And that's what happens is very, very often I find that you know, there's an incident, it's, for example, 3 years old, they may or may not have a memory of it, and then something else at 12 and something else at 20. And these things are connected, but logically and mentally, they may not have put them together, but their guidance will show them via what I see from there, because that's who I'm connecting with, is their guidance, not mine.
Yeah.
Will show the connection there, and it will really turn light bulbs on for people. It really does shift awareness, and that's the first step in shifting anything.
Absolutely, is acknowledging there is something there.
Yeah,
that's the first step.
And also, I'll go back to this: is having some compassion for themselves. And as I was saying, looking at people in the world stage, looking at their energy and finding that compassionate place, an empathetic place for their life story and their past life story, etc. You know, we are. Other people have said this. I love this phrase. We're the otters of the universe. We're happy, happy creatures, right? And we really do live in joy, except whatever limitations we personally put on them or are put on us and we accept as real.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating to look at it from that perspective.
I chuckle because I have a cat by the name of Ryan. I call him my surprise kitty because my wife and I, for a period of time, fostered here locally with a local cat shelter, mm-hmm. kittens, usually small, you know, just born or what have you, and even mamas who were going to give birth and so forth. And my wife was, she was to take all of the fosters that we had. It was time for them to go. They were now 2 pounds apiece, and it was time for them to go get their vaccinations and then be adopted out. And she was supposed to come back empty-handed. And I come home from work, and out from under the dining room table comes this little white and tan kitty, like a tuxedo kitty, but the tan instead of the black. And I named him almost right away, and he was my surprise kitty because I was surprised he was there. Well, the point of the story is that now, as a very large cat, he loves rolling over on his back, curls his front paws down, and he looks like an otter.
Oh, cute.
And he's all white on his belly, just pure white. And so we just are rubbing him, little otter. And I was just thinking, that's kind of the way we are. You're right. And that kind of goes to what someone said to me some time ago when we were talking about our evolution as human beings. My question to them, I put this to you as well. I said, so is our evolution going to be where eventually we're going to get to a point where we're going to remember who we are?
He says, no.
And this was an interesting distinction on his part. You're not going to remember who you are. You're going to remember who you've always been.
Oh, I love that.
Big difference.
Well, you know, the way I connect with my guidance, my higher self, and the way I teach connection to higher self, because that's how we do the work of clairvoyance, our higher selves are pure joy, pure love. They're hilarious, actually. And they're there to help us walk our path and become more of who we are authentically. And that's what we choose to come into life with. So I kind of agree with him. You know, we choose to, this is my belief system and how I see it in terms of what I've discussed with my higher guidance, et cetera, is that we choose to come in with a set of what is the word? I was going to say challenges, but I don't think that's the word. I think choices is the better word. Mm-hmm. And how we navigate them is part of the free will choice we have as humans in this great, wonderful, on this beautiful planet, in this wonderful bodies. And we have choices, and some of us don't feel like we have choices. You know, some of us feel quite victimized and put upon and all that. But our movement towards wholeness is a movement towards self-awareness and understanding our choices and making choices and acting on our free will. I don't know if that makes any sense. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
Because it ties not only into this program.
Yeah.
Giving you choices and knowledge of those choices
exactly.
Help make your dreams come true. And a lot of people kind of are curious as to that's kind of a weird phrasing. Is it? Well, but we don't know what we don't know.
There you go.
The analogy is you're walking in the fog down this road. You see the white line on the shoulder, and you have been told from childhood, you just stay to the right, just follow that white line, you'll be fine. And that's okay, because that's the only way that you can get from point A to point B. And it's perfectly okay. There's no judgment there. It's neither right nor wrong. There's no manipulation here.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, one day you're walking along, and the fog lifts, and you see a fork in the road.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? You now have a choice.
Yeah.
You can choose to go that way, or you can stay on this particular path.
Yeah, there's really no right or wrong in that respect in terms of our choices, except that where am I going with this? When someone comes to see a psychic, they're coming to see a psychic or an intuitive because they have choices that they're not sure which way to go. I mean, that really becomes the underlying question. I could do this. I can do this. What about that? How did this happen? All those sorts of questions. And, you know, for me, what I do is, and I think most intuitives would say this, is you're tapping into their guidance to get that information. Now, if they could do that themselves via meditation or study or whatever, they wouldn't need to come to the intuitive or the psychic, because we'd be communicating, as I do with my higher self, and I say, you know, left or right. Look, you know the parking spot game, Richard?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
People play that game, and that's where you think there's a parking angel, and you say, should I turn left or right? Is there a parking spot on this? You know, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what that is? There's no parking spot angel. There's no actual deity that has a parking sign. There's actually your higher self guiding you.
Yeah.
And when we start to practice that connection and study how to connect with that and learn these skills, boy, it's just it becomes more and more comfortable, and you start to trust it more and more. And then you can say, all right, I can't see the, you know, where that path is going to lead, but I'm getting from my guidance that that's the place to go. So I'm just going to take this fear I have, I'm going to set it aside, and I'm going
to
move.
I've shared the experience where I used to bicycle everywhere in Phoenix, where I used to live. Mm-hmm. And I was bicycling to work one day, and I was out in what we call the South 40, because it was amidst farm fields, was where the transmitter site was where I worked. And it was probably, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 miles. And you know how long a farm block is. It's, you know, it's bigger than a standard city block. And I was getting this prompting. I was coming up to an intersection. I was getting the prompting. You need to turn right, go up one block, and then turn left.
Yeah.
And then turn left again, go back down onto the same road you were on, and continue on. And I thought, that's weird. I mean, I'd been getting these promptings many times, and I'd usually follow them. But I just, for some reason, I was questioning it this time.
Sure.
So I went on through the intersection. I got halfway between the two intersections. I turned around. I went back, and this time I made the left, which would have been the right had I done it the first time. Made the left, and continued on my way. Now, all I know is I felt better doing that.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know what I avoided or what I came across that I was supposed to, or if I was just supposed to delay my arrival at the station.
Yeah.
I don't know. All I know is, and that's why when I share this, and I used to say this a little more dogmatically, but now I say it very gently. If you are going to listen to that still small voice, then follow the promptings. Because if you're not, then why are you listening?
Yeah, that's right on.
You know?
That's right on.
But I don't want to be dogmatic about that, because it's like, you know, look, you're going to choose to listen to whatever you're going to listen to and follow whatever you're going to follow, okay? I have to say that I feel as though throughout my entire life, I've been at the right place at the right time.
Exactly.
I don't know why. And I was told going through a personal growth program, give up the need to know why.
Exactly.
Okay? Also, I was told by someone else, you know, why don't you leave some questions unanswered for the next life?
Oh, that's not me at all. I'm a big question asker. I want to know. Forget the afterlife. I want to know now. Yeah, that's great. And we're talking about that still small voice. Mm-hmm. Actually, my higher self is actually pretty loud and bossy.
Oh, okay. Well.
Because that's the relationship I have. And it's full of love and loving. And that's what our higher selves are. But I will tell you, it's like, will you just take a sweater, you know, when you're going out to take your jacket, you know, turn left here. You know, I tell my students when they're learning how to make that connection is use it like a magic eight ball. Just say yes or no, you know, do I wear this or that? Do I have this for dinner or that for dinner? And just get whatever you get. And that sort of openness of non-essential information, right? Does it matter if you have a hamburger or a, you know, piece of steak? I don't know, you know, but you just ask your higher self, just so which or what, this or that. And that sort of starts opening you up to the experience of receiving guidance.
I know there's another method. It's called kinesiology that I also learned.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all basically the same stuff. I mean, there's no difference in that regard. But you're not devoid of guidance.
Never.
It's always there.
Well, I'll tell you what stops guidance.
Okay.
Two things stop guidance. One is fear. Mm-hmm. Your higher self can't get through that. I mean, it can. It certainly does.
Sure.
And it should, especially when you're in a place where there might actually be something scary happening. Your higher self would really kick in. So it's important to listen to that. But fear does stop. It can stop you from listening.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is high emotion, which may not have fear in it, but it might have sorrow or grief or, you know, emotional pain of some sort. That can really stop you from listening. It's not that your higher self isn't telling you things or guiding you. It's that we might be discounting it and just thinking it's not something to pay attention to. So those are the two states I've seen. And certainly when someone is in a physical trauma issue, you know, they have some physical imbalance that's really worrying them or scaring them, that's a good time to go talk to somebody.
Yeah. Am I correct in saying this, which I've been saying for quite a number of years, that your higher self, your still small voice, whatever name you want to label it with, will never, ever, ever, ever put you in harm's way. It might challenge you, but what you were just saying was that if you're in fear and the voice comes through and is trying to guide you out of it,
I don't know if I would say that's such an interesting question. I'm not sure I would say put you in harm's way. I will say that we come in making choices about our life trajectory. And from the now this is getting pretty out there, mm-hmm. but from the pre-life point of view, mm-hmm. we come in with certain things we want to experience and learn.
Right.
And this gets pretty philosophical here because some of us, who would want to grow up in a family where there's physical abuse? Nobody. Nobody would want that. But sometimes that's a choice from the pre-life position. We say, I'm going to incarnate into this family with this level of, you know, trauma. And there's a reason for that in terms of our life's path. Now, that's pretty heavy stuff.
Now, my question, though, is, has the still small voice read my contract?
The still small voice is your contract. You and your, you know, and we merge with our higher self and we say, okay, now in our soul's trajectory, in our path, we want to learn this. We want to learn that. There's a great book, Neil Donald Walsh's Conversations with God.
Oh, yeah.
Where I'm going to forget the story, of course, right now. But the point is that no, our decisions in life in terms, and people have a hard time with this. Why would I ever choose this life? Yeah, I have ancestors and family members who were, frankly, killed in the Holocaust. Why would they choose that, you know, or things along those lines? Well, from our higher self state, it's a much broader perspective. And mm-hmm. we don't see things the same way we do from this perspective as humans of life and death and pain and fear and all that. From our higher self perspective, we see it as education and soul's growth. And that can be difficult to sort of, you know, take in and assimilate. But when the pieces get put together for you and you can see that this particular experience from your lifetime, from your childhood or from your years was really important for this awareness and understanding for you now, then it starts to make sense.
Yeah.
But I believe very firmly, and for someone who's very spiritual and talks to my higher self constantly and other people's as well, I've got 2 feet on the ground. You know, I don't live up in the clouds. I'm here to live this life on this planet in this body at this time. Mm-hmm. What an interesting time, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm very committed to it, you know? Here we are.
Here we are. And what I find interesting, too, and I've heard it said that I was just speaking with someone just the other day, quite literally, and trying to understand, you know, why are we here, as it were, the one of those universal questions that everybody asks down through the ages kind of thing. And their conclusion, and it's kind of what you've already alluded to, is the whole purpose of coming here or our existence period is spiritual growth. That's it. There is nothing else but spiritual growth.
Emotional growth mm-hmm. goes along with spiritual growth.
But do the emotions carry over into life between lives? When I die, do I still have that emotional part of me?
Well, in my experience, the higher self is pure love, joy, and humor. And I have not talked to any people who have passed out of bodies that aren't joyful, happy, and calm. So my experience of people, and granted, I'm not a medium per se, but I can connect with higher selves of people who have passed on. And I mean, almost, I've never seen one that isn't, you know, really happy and connected and mm-hmm. feeling complete. So my understanding of the between body state is one of joy and, mm-hmm. and happiness. So emotions, sure.
Okay.
But positive emotions. I mean, there's probably a whole other show about, you know, unhappy, you know, disembodied people, but
yeah.
that's another kind of an energy and
yeah.
another point of view.
Yeah. Well, and I was mentioning too also about, you know, working for various stations and not really focusing in on the news. I know of man's inhumanity to man in all of its various forms. I don't need to be bombarded by that same information from the TV, the radio, the print, and other people.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when people want to tell me that thus and such and this and that and the other thing happened. Sad. It's a sad commentary, yes, but I'm not surprised because we haven't grown up. I'm going to say a good friend of mine. He was one of my guests. He's been on twice. He was 94 the first time I had him on. His name is Jacques Fresco. He's a visionary as far as future civilizations and the way that he sees them as developing. And we went through the whole couple of interviews, and I asked him at the end of the first one, I says, so do you see this happening in your lifetime or maybe mine? And of course, guy's 94. And he says, no, it'll never happen in mine. Probably won't happen in yours. And here was his answer. Because humanity has not risen to a level of consciousness yet to where these things could come to play. And I'm going, yeah, but I want that now. I like what you have to offer.
Yeah, there's a lot of us who do. And it's about, maybe it's that 100th monkey thing. There just has to be a zeitgeist. But I'll tell you what, it's not that it doesn't exist already, because it exists within every human being, that ability to connect with your guidance and to feel that clarity and whatever the words are that, describe that connection.
Well, the concept of a wormhole, right, is where the example is they take a piece of paper and they fold it in half and the wormhole goes through. Mm. It's a timeline, basically. The flat sheet of paper is linear.
Right.
And when you fold it, so it's like I want to create a wormhole and pull, either pull myself to the other side into the future or pull the future here.
Yeah.
As far as that's concerned.
I know. And I so feel that, too. I really
This is where we are. This is where we are.
I know. Why did we choose here now? Goodness gracious. What is going on? Well, we're here to create the future. I'm positive of that.
Yeah. And we are doing that.
Yeah.
We are doing that. And hopefully we're doing that through this program. And we're going to continue talking with Wendy Coulter, who is, as we've talked before, she's a medical intuitive. She has a website called thepracticalpath.com. We encourage you to go to her website and see what she has to offer for you. Medical intuitive, clairvoyant. She is a master healer as well as a transformational coach. We're going to talk a little bit about that as well as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms for a new world. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms for a new world. I'm Richard Dugan along with Wendy Coulter. And we're here talking about not only her website, thepracticalpath.com. That's thepracticalpath.com. But also in terms of some of the things that she has to offer. I'm basically talking about transformational tools for inspiring people. And I refer to them as modalities. There's so many different modalities, whether you're talking about healing, mm-hmm. whether you're talking about guidance and inspiration and on and the list goes on. And I try not to focus an awful lot on a lot of what we call in this reality the negative stuff.
Yeah, I'm
because there's so much there that it's like and the television shows I made a reference to at the beginning of the program.
Yeah.
And then again, there are so many of them. And matter of fact, there is one in particular. She knows I don't want to watch because of the sounds that some of the characters make. Okay.
Well, here's the thing. Here's what I would say about that. First of all, when it comes to media, entertainment, and what's going out there in the world, which can be quite dark, that's certainly a personal choice. I have friends who are highly spiritual that think horror movies are just the funniest things ever, and they love them. That's not me. I don't go see those.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand you wanting to keep your energy, your vibration raised, which you don't want to have it dragged down. I will tell you this, though, and I teach this in my program, is if as a medical intuitive or clairvoyant, if you cannot look at the darkest of human nature, you're not going to be good at the job because you have to look at that stuff. You have to be able to, and you have to be neutral enough in your own energy to not be affected by it, right? So that's a real skill set.
Yeah.
And you started out talking about modalities. And if you don't mind me making a little distinction here, energy medicine is definitely a modality. Medical intuition is actually a skill set that supports a zillion modalities.
Okay.
Because it's a foundation in intuition. So you can use intuition. A therapist, a psychologist can use intuition in their work. A medical doctor can use intuition. An energy healer, a massage therapist can use these intuitive skills in their modality. So that's a bit of a distinction in terms of that word because that gets thrown around a good deal and it has a specific meaning.
Well, it's one of those, one of the things that as I have, and I've been on my search since I was 17. Officially. My primer, and everybody knows what it is who's listened to this program, it's Autobiography of a Yogi.
Mm.
And I found it fascinating. I always find it interesting, the things that I gravitate to, and then I hear of certain other people or entities or companies or what have you. For example, the software that I use for sound editing, I've been using since it was a beta small little thing from AOL's download section back in 1994. Mm-hmm. I've been using the same software, and I've upgraded to the various things. And then I saw BBC using it in an article in a trade magazine. I'm going, hey, if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me. but when I found out that Steve Jobs, the only book he had on his iPhone was Autobiography Yogi, I'm going, well, I'm glad he found that, because I've known it since I was 17.
Yes.
But I don't know when he got it. But and I remember when I started working for the Christian radio station back in the 80s and early 90s, and I used to share a little bit of this with some of the people there. They said, well, yeah, but, you know, your search, well, once you find Jesus, your search is over. And I said to them, I said, well, no, actually, once I find Jesus, it's just begun.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And the things that I have found and the people that I have come in contact with and the relationships that I have developed in the metaphysical realms, if you will, I consider myself to be just that, a metaphysician. I've been dubbed Dr. D, the audio physician.
I love it.
I have no degree, but I'm curious. I'm curious about the way things are. I jokingly say about that period of 15 years in my life that if I had been branded with a big old H on my forehead, I would have worn it with pride, because I would rather be a heretic than a sheep.
Oh, we've all been heretics. You know? Anyone in the spiritual realm has past lives as heretics. And who knows? I'm making a big broad statement here. But certainly you don't come to this kind of information without really feeling like you're challenging the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, having grown up in California, it's certainly a lot less restrictive here than it might be somewhere in the Bible Belt, for example, or other areas where there's a very strong belief system that really runs the culture. So that's a bit of a gift. But honestly, you know, when you delve into spirituality, it's all there. This information actually is contained in most spiritual texts, including the Bible.
That's one of the fascinating things that I have found in my travels, I'm going to say, on this radio program. Mm. And I've been greatly gratified by the discoveries. Matter of fact, the very first person I ever interviewed was still at that station. He had written a book called The Apocalypse Conspiracy, where he basically said Christendom's been taken down a primrose road or lane, what have you, that what they have been told is not the truth. And the bottom line from his perspective, even though he still held on to that label, was that the entire, and again, this was his perspective, the entire Christian experience is an internal one. And then he would go through the proofs and he'd bring up the original writings. And I remember taking his book. It was the first book that I actually read cover to cover, because I never really had the time to read the books. So I wanted to make, I didn't want to be quoting him. I wanted to make his information mine. So I pulled out my concordance, which I still have. I pulled out his book and my Bible, and I went through and I found the information. So now I can say, and this is what I found.
Wow.
And
that's impressive.
So the sad thing though is that most people today, it's not the question of they're not willing to do that. They don't know how. This goes back to the argument of having choices.
Yeah.
They don't know that they can do this.
Well, you're talking about belief systems, really, and how intense or how strong they are in whatever culture you're raised in. And this is all over the world.
Yeah.
And you know, I'll say that much organized religion, even some of the best ones, you know, and all of them have this beautiful kernel of spiritual truth. All of them do, and some even more than a kernel. But it gets lost when there is the human proclivity for controlling others and people's ability to deny their own experience and therefore lose their ability to be empathetic with those who are not of their own group. It's a real interesting thing that humans have that I think is one of the big pitfalls that we experience.
I think one of the most intriguing things I found when I had this 5-book series, you're probably familiar with it, by Spalding, Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually part of a study group at a church, CEC, back in Phoenix,
wow,
which I really enjoyed. And I remember reading, I want to say it was probably in book 4, but I don't remember exactly where. Anyway, it was where these explorers came upon, as I would like to call them, the explorers, came upon this cave. And in the cave, they came across Pontius Pilate. They came across Jesus.
Hmm.
And Jesus was quoted in that setting as being rather sad.
Hmm.
He was really, you know, kind of, you know, melancholy. And of course, then the questions, well, why? Well, because I can't get close to man.
Mm.
Man has put me up so high, I can't commune with man.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
And I think had tears in my eyes thinking, wow, here's this guy who came with a message, didn't want to be the focal point of the message, wanted the message to be the focal point.
Yes.
I even joke with people that, you know, beyond the epistle, beyond the book of Acts in the New Testament, if the people back then had gotten it, we wouldn't have needed all of the other letters.
Sure.
Because those were nothing more than, you don't get rule number 1, paragraph B, section C. Well, let me explain it to you.
Well, you know what's really interesting, and as you're talking, it's so fascinating. And I'll relate it again to, you know, sort of what I see in people's energy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first things I look for in anyone's energy is where their belief systems are, what it is they've chosen to believe, either beliefs that have been sort of, they've been inculcated into in their family or their environment or their social structure. And those beliefs very often don't serve them in their desires in life. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
And then there's a question of, well, here's this belief. Here's who gave it to you. Here's why. Here's why you chose to believe it. Are you willing to just look at it, you know, just take it in as something that may or may not be, you know, something you want to I'm not talking about religious beliefs.
Right.
I'm talking about beliefs about themselves, beliefs about mm-hmm. life,
yeah,
beliefs about what they can personally accept for themselves or accomplish things
and
like that.
Especially those that hold them back. It took me several years to let go of the concepts of hell and the devil.
Sure.
Because it didn't make sense to me. It didn't make I remember hearing this passage thrown at me all the time about how, you know, we need to come together and reason together.
Right.
Okay? And I'm thinking, well, what do you use to reason? You use your brain. You use logical, and that's my theory.
Yeah,
you use
sure.
logical thought. So and then, of course, I started talking with rabbis about mm-hmm. this whole these concepts. And
yeah, there's none of that in Judaism.
Anyway, but no, I agree with you in that respect, and it's I hope that I mean I still I remember I was between high school and college. I took 6 months off, and I remember sitting there watching soap operas
uh-huh.
while my mother was ironing. And she suggested, well, why don't you go get a job at one of the religious radio stations? To which I said to her,
yeah.
I still remember this, no, I don't want them shoving their beliefs down my throat.
Yeah.
Well, when I went to work for a religious radio station, I started doing that.
Shoving beliefs down people's throats?
Yeah.
Well,
and I had to learn how to back off of that.
You know, this is part of the human condition. We are belief machines. We
yeah,
really are.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, because if it's making you happy, if it's serving your community, if it's serving yourself, if you're feeling that sense of expansiveness and you're not trying to hurt, control, or manipulate anyone,
yeah.
well, yay, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And so I don't have a beef with any religion. I have a beef with belief systems that curtail our own sense of freedom.
Yeah.
And that's a problem for humans. It really
yeah.
is.
And again, I don't know how much television you watch.
A good amount.
All right. There's a program, I think it's exclusively on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Path.
No, I don't know that one.
And it is about a religious group.
Yeah.
And the ism is called Meyerism for the gentleman who founded it, Stephen Myers.
Mm.
And the concept or the philosophy is around what's called the ladder.
Mm.
And you work your way up the ladder. I mean, they're great metaphors. They really are,
yeah.
especially from a metaphysical standpoint.
Sure.
But the whole premise is obviously about power and control and manipulation.
Yeah. Now, so I love Autobiography of a Yogi as well. And mm-hmm. what a powerful guru teacher Yogananda was mm-hmm. And still is. And I love the spiritual teachers of this planet. There's so much information there. And I don't follow a guru or a religion because I connect with my guidance, yeah. You know. My guidance is connected to all that is. And I think that's where we get we can get off our path. It's not a bad thing to follow someone's path, to follow someone's trajectory. But I called my company the Practical Path because I teach people to connect with their own guidance so that yeah. they don't have to curtail their own free will or sense of freedom. And that's where things get really hairy for people.
Yeah. Like you, I don't have a central figure that I follow.
Yeah.
And there are times when I question, am I missing out on something? I mean, all these other people, they're following this person and that person. And I'm talking about persons as opposed to philosophies. Yeah. And I refer to them as philosophies because yeah. that's really what they are.
Yeah.
I refer to what we're doing with this radio program and, of course, what I'm doing in my life as a continual collective evolutionary philosophy.
Yes, okay? I love that.
I know it's a little big, not going to fit on a business card real well, but but that's really what it is because it's not locking down to one set of rules.
Yeah.
I jokingly say with people about science, for example, that science comes across and discovers the 10 rules of the universe. And by the way, there are 7 billion rules of the universe.
And they change every decade or
and they
way
change,
faster.
Or they find 11 and say, oh, now we've got them all. There are only 11. And there's physics and then there's quantum physics. I'm going, why couldn't the information in quantum physics be done in physics? And then, of course, everybody uses the word quantum in front. It's the quantum practical path.
Yeah, I try to avoid that word.
Oh,
I try to avoid those buzzwords. Let me I love what you're saying. It's so funny and so true. But it could just be part of the evolution
it
of what we're
be.
Going through. And
I think about that too.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you know, 20 years ago, you couldn't do Reiki anywhere, you know? now Reiki's in hospitals. So there is definitely an evolution that we see right. happening. It's probably speeding up at this point. But I want to go back to TV shows because
sure.
you've brought up a few.
Sure.
My favorite television show in terms of what we're talking about is Star Trek, the old Star Trek, and I'll tell you why. Most every episode from that early stuff, right,
mm-hmm.
was all about human freedom,
mm-hmm.
the sense of the mm-hmm. whole concept of freedom, free will.
Sure.
And every time that free will was, you know, stopped or, you know, impinged upon in some way by some alien culture or there was, boy, that was the message all the way through that show. And
yeah.
I was quite young watching that. So
yeah.
maybe it made that impression on me. I don't know.
and even The Next Generation was similar.
Yes, exactly.
Matter of fact, a dear friend of mine and I, we worked together at the religious station and we were both Trekkies. And it was during the heyday of The Next
yeah.
Generation. And he said something to me that I have been able to incorporate into a series that we did in 2014 on this radio program called Mythosophia, Exploring the Depths of Myth and Wisdom on Tell Me Your Story. And what he shared with me was so profound that I've watched the series now, both even the original 60s and the 80s.
It got better. I think there's just wonderful.
It's our modern day mythology.
Yes, it is.
And I thought, wow. And so I start watching it from a whole different perspective.
All the stories have that kernel, though. They
well,
have,
here's,
all about
here's one
will.
I'll throw at you to dive into this as well.
Yeah.
There's a character in Next Generation, and has permeated the others as well, that I don't think Roddenberry intended for it to be used in this example, but I'm going to use it in this context. You know, we talk about the still small voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's this character in Next Generation that has the still small voice almost constantly running through it, okay? And as we are receiving that information and then hopefully following the promptings to do whatever it is that you have your tasks, your path, I have mine, they also, as individuals, have their task or path.
Hmm.
The character is the Borg.
Oh, well.
Now.
I didn't see that coming, but sure.
And so when you look at that as a metaphysical or metaphor, I should say, for our own spiritual existence. And that's not to say that there's this centralized character that's feeding you and me these voices for some nefarious or strange thing. Of course, back in Next Generation, we didn't know who the voice was coming from.
Right.
But it's to me, it's a prime example of, look, my path and your path are different, but somehow in the grand scheme of things that we can't really see in the big picture, they are intertwined.
Well, you know, that's so interesting. I would characterize the Borg as the thought form mind, mm-hmm. or the hive mind, the thought forms that we can tap into.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be my spin on it, perhaps, that there are these energetic thought forms out there about everything, right?
Yeah.
And certainly we can tap into, like in the political realm that we are in right now in the United States. Boy, is it easy to tap into all that drama and fear and anxiety and everything. And there's nothing, I'm not saying those emotions or those thought forms aren't real and valid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying we can tap into it and think that's the whole picture.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I would mythologize or characterize the Borg energy as this sort of thought form hive mind that we as humans can, you know, we do have choice about that.
Well, thoughts just came to my mind. Well, I protect myself. I have a giant salt circle around my house.
Oh, okay.
And I have crosses up to protect me. No, I'm kidding. But
you have garlic strands and all.
Well, that's next. I'm thinking about that. I just haven't gotten quite that far yet. But the one thing that has actually helped me, especially in this particular realm of the political arena, is to back up a little bit and start to see the individuals as just that, individuals. And even going back to something that you spoke about in the first segment about the stuff that was generated from birth through childhood and adolescenthood that has made these individuals, just as it has made me, the person I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't extract any of the stuff I don't want from it, because now I'm not the person that I am, because that piece has now been taken out. And it's kind of like pulling on a string on a tapestry. You start pulling that string and the tapestry falls apart.
Yeah.
You can't do it. That's why I struggle with some of these television programs, back to TV shows, about time travel. One in particular, I think it's called Timeline, something like that, where there are these two time machines and there's one guy who had his wife and kid were killed.
Ooh.
So now he's going back in time to pull, if you will, the thread of the tapestry in regards to the person in the future who killed his children, or his wife and kid. He goes back to the past to try to unravel that string of ancestry.
Wow.
But it's all based on revenge.
Yeah, well,
it's all about, and I'm going, I can't watch this show.
You know,
because it's the craziest premise.
Well, because drama.
Sure,
boy, love it. But I'll tell you what, I'll relate that to my visiting the Akashic Records for people. Now, it's not about pulling a string and, you know, changing how people get born and all jazz.
Right.
But it certainly is about looking at the trajectory, like the entire trajectory of someone's soul's path.
Okay.
From, you know, deciding to incarnate as a human or an animal or whatever, all the way up to the present moment and potential future lives as well. And that is incredible information, because we're also interconnected, including our family, our friends, you know, the person whose bumper you hit, you know, on the freeway or whatever, you know, any little anything. There's just this interconnectedness. And going back to the whole idea of quantum, you know, string theory and all that. When you start looking at it from that perspective energetically, it is a mind blower. It just, we have very little reference for that, you know, in our mental capacity. However, it's available. That information is available. So in our this particular lifetime, with the awareness of where we came from, what happened in these connections, in these relationships, and where we are now, again comes down to that free will choice about how we're going to move forward with those particular relationships. And we're all very caught up in our family relationships, our significant others, our children, these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
How interesting is it to have all that information about what those connections are.
Yeah.
I bet it just changes everything.
You know, and you bring to mind, I mean, so many different things. Our attachment to one another, not necessarily in terms of the relationships that we foster, but the relationships that we just come into, even in being born into a particular family. And the process that we go through when certain members of that family disappear.
Hmm.
They go away. They transition.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my present wife, actually my ex-wife, and I found out about my ex-wife shared this with me several years ago, and it was actually, I was angered because I hadn't been informed about the death of her father, 4 months later, the death of her mother, due to a broken heart, and then a few months later, the death of her best friend.
Oh, golly, that's heavy.
On the surgery, on the operating table. Then there's my present wife, who has lost all, and there were seven of them, not including the parents, all but one of her siblings.
Wow.
Not in the time I've known her, in the 20 years I've known her, but certainly many of them in that period. I, on the other hand, still have my parents knocking around in their 80s. I've got my older sisters, my younger brother, my two younger sisters, all still alive. Mm. Plus the fact that we've got nieces. It's interesting. We have no nephews. matter of fact, my parents are great-grandparents.
Wow.
Helping to raise their great-granddaughter, and now there's another great-granddaughter.
That's lovely.
They're all still alive.
Yeah.
And, of course, when all this other stuff happens to other people, whether it's my boss, my wife, other people that I know who are losing people left and right, and I'm sitting here going, and how am I going to react when – and I just – I think about it going, you know, with my parents, I've already gotten everything from them that I could ever possibly get.
Yeah.
Not just in terms of, oh, my life, of course, but the things that they have taught me over the years. I mean, I quote my dad all the time.
Yeah.
And my mom. Mm-hmm. We started out talking a lot about healing. And I think I was in bed with the flu, and I was laying there and I was moaning. And one of my older sisters was in there with my mother over my bed. And she, my sister says, well, Mom, make him stop. He sounds terrible. She says, no, that's how he heals himself.
Mm.
You know, and I've even encouraged people to do that. If you feel like moaning, moan.
Yeah, sure.
And really let it go. Don't worry about what other people think.
Yeah.
But I think, well, wouldn't the solution be not to get attached?
No, of course not. But that is the Eastern philosophy. That is a big part of Eastern philosophy, as Westerners might understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's more to it than that. But that idea of non-attachment, I say, you know, I'm sorry. We are certainly Western folks. We're all about attachment. What there is understanding that this isn't the only life, you know, and that's where, you know, culturally we don't really have an understanding of that unless you are in a religious, then there's that whole idea of the afterlife. But from the spiritual perspective, and certainly from talking to people who are out of their bodies, you know, we get to merge with our higher guidance. We get to, you know, move on with our education and our soul's path. When my father died, my wonderful father, who didn't believe in any of this, a very pragmatic man, knew I did all this spiritual work, thought it was amusing and interesting. We'd have these sort of conversations every now and then where he was very curious about it, but it was nothing having to do with his belief system at all. But he loved me and respected me. And after he passed away, I got to say, I have a better relationship now, and I had a great relationship with him. Mm-hmm. I have an even better one with him now.
Mm.
And people might go, you're making it up, but I got to tell you, he and I, from a higher self perspective, have great conversations. And
well, who's to argue with you?
Well,
it's your experience, you know.
Nobody, but that's what's available.
Yeah.
You know, and when people lose their family members or their loved ones, what they're experiencing is the grief of loss. And that is always that's just a curve. That takes time.
Yeah.
Grief is a very powerful process.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And a very healing one, too, in many ways. So
absolutely. Whenever we suppress in any way, shape, or form our emotions, and actually whatever the emotion is, okay, we do ourselves harm. On some level, we do ourselves harm.
We can do ourselves massive physical harm. Massive. Yeah. I have most of the clients I see that where there is some sort of chronic imbalance, like back problems or things like that, there is usually stuck emotion. Mm-hmm. And energy healers know this because they're going to start removing that anyway,
yeah.
that congested emotion, pain, fear, trauma, even from the physical standpoint of getting in an accident. But then there's all the emotional component. But the thing here is that people can bring that. This is why energy work is important, but it all has to do with the person's permission level, whether or not they're really willing to release completely.
Yeah.
So from the medical intuitive point of view, if someone has a chronic condition and they're getting healings and they're doing this work, but it's not going away, something else is in play.
Yeah.
So
this is not a parallel example, but I remember reading about this when it comes to sneezing, mm-hmm. for example, mm-hmm. in terms of suppressing. If you suppress a sneeze, you can quite literally blow your eardrums out.
That's right.
There is no joke with that. It's serious.
Thank goodness,
so now
we can't.
Put that on an emotional level. You start suppressing emotions. And again, what if you're suppressing joy and mm-hmm. happiness and all of those different things?
Yeah.
You know, you're going to explode out somewhere.
Well, this is that mind-body connect. Exactly. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That is, in a nutshell, how you can really define physical issues.
Yeah.
Now, you know, there are some medical intuitives who say, oh, if it's physical, it's just physical and you have to deal with it. And that's fine. But if you're not getting to the emotional component, the mental-emotional construct, you're not doing the job completely. And you're honestly, people will heal. That's the thing about this work that I love so much, is watching people make those connections, their guidance telling me what those connections are, bringing it to their awareness so they can actually start to raise their level of permission for releasing it. That's where the miracles happen, honestly.
I think one of the other aspects of it, too, is that, and I know you probably do teach this aspect, as opposed to Orthodox medicine of days gone by, that taught that the doctor did the healing, you don't do any healing at all.
Well,
you actually facilitate the individual, because if they don't, it would be a kind of ironic for them to come to you and not accept the, shall we say, the energy. With Reiki, for example.
Well, people do.
Well, sure they do. Absolutely. But it seems like, well, why are you even bothering going to this person if you're going to reject everything that they're offering you? And that's not to say that you can't question, just as with medical doctors. I mean, I'm all the time, I'm sitting here telling my physician regarding my high blood pressure. And by the way, this is what's funny. They drew all the blood that they could draw and took all the samples that they wanted to take, and they found nothing as far as a symptom of high blood pressure or a causality of high blood pressure. That's not where the problem is. It's up here in my head.
Yeah.
Okay? That's where the problem, because I get so intense about certain things,
stress.
And I just need the...
They don't... There's not a... You're absolutely right. This is an interesting time we live in, especially in California, where integrative and functional medicine is really starting to come to the fore.
Yeah.
And doctors are starting to talk about and realize the mental, emotional component of health. Wow. I mean, you know... That's big in the Western medicine world. I will also tell you that, misdiagnosis comes from, and boy, the doctors hate that word because, you know, everybody has their education and their education is completely valid. However, if you don't have the biggest picture for someone in regards to their health, and you're just saying, oh, lower your stress level lower your blood pressure. Well, guess what? With medical intuition or with these intuitive skills, you can find out where the pressure is so that someone has a very clear and concrete way to really rebalance their life. I mean, hello.
There is so much that we could talk about in so many different directions. But, what's great is the fact that this information's out there.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to go off onto the tangent of the Akashic Records.
Mm.
Matter of fact, it brought to mind the library at Alexandria, which was destroyed.
Yes.
Thinking, oh, there's a library they can't destroy. Because odds are they probably can't get to it because they're too locked into the material world. To even be aware of the fact that there's this information that's out there that we all, literally, in all caps, all have access to.
Well, our higher selves is that information. Our higher selves are our connection to all that is.
Yeah.
And boy, you know, we can take trips to the Alexandria Library, you know, energetically speaking, and there's no lack of information. It's our connection and our permission level to be connected, ultimately.
And if you'd like to connect with Wendy Coulter and thepracticalpath.com, that's the website to do so. We will link to your website as well so that people can go there as hopefully they're listening to the interview and get more information. You have classes or trainings that are going on in Los Angeles and in San Diego, so there's a good opportunity for folks in Southern California. I'm sure people fly in from all over the world.
Yeah, people do, and actually I'm also open to flying elsewhere if there's a big enough group of people. I can do retreats and things like that. I've done a bit of that, and I'm open to it. So check it out.
That's very cool. Very cool. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. I do not have to extend the invitation to you that I do to others, that if you're ever in the Santa Barbara area, please drop in. We'll continue the conversation face to face. We're doing it.
Great. I love it.
And I would love to have you back on the program again
to
continue this conversation, because it's to me, it's fascinating. There's so many different directions that obviously we can go.
Yeah.
And before we let you go, three final questions that I have for you that I ask all of my guests.
Okay.
The first is, who is Wendy Coulter?
Oh, goodness. How much time do I have here? I'm a person who's always been curious about what isn't said. You know, I've always sort of wanted to know, you know, because I've perceived energy from the time I was quite young. So I've always wanted to know more about that. So I would say I wouldn't define myself as a seeker, because I think that means there's something missing. I am a curious person in a nutshell.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Oh, thank you for that question. I would like to see a transformation in healthcare, where doctors, medical doctors, nurses, and people who work with people in crisis or in who have conditions, to integrate the intuitive skill set so that we can have truly holistic medicine, truly holistic healthcare, where not just the physicality or not just the mental, but the mind, body, and spirit, pardon me, are fully integrated in every kind of healthcare. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm here to do.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Oh, I to be happy, really, to have a good time in life, and to, do the work I'm doing. It really is a long time. I mean, we didn't talk about, you know, my background or anything, but like most people in this field, we have all these experiences of life, and at some point we go, here it is. This is what I'm meant to do, and I'm meant to teach this. So there you go.
Wonderful. Wendy Coulter, and that's with an IE, WENDIE. Wendy Coulter and thepracticalpath.com. We encourage you to go to the website and investigate what she has to offer. I think that you're going to find a wealth of information and guidance there. And again, thank you so much for joining us here on the program.
Thank you so much, Richard. What a pleasure.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.